Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Donna Freeman, and I am broadcasting live today from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, where it is a balmy minus 5. Yes, you did hear that, minus 5. It's the beginning of December. We have snow, all those kind of lovely things. We are all ready for the season, and it's just a pleasure to be able to connect with all of you who are listening today and in the future, because we have a really great show with a fantastic guest. But before I get into all that goodness, as we talk about best practices for yoga in schools, I do want to tell you about an upcoming webinar on Kids Yoga Academy that's happening this Thursday, December 10th, with Giselle Shardlow, and she's going to talk about creating holiday yoga lesson plans and how you can do that and how much fun and how effective they are. So definitely check out Kids Yoga Academy for that webinar, as well as webinars from our guest today, Jennifer Cohen Harper, and many, many other people who have contributed to the Best Practices for Yoga in Schools book, which is what we're talking about today. And I'm so excited about this book. I got my hands on a copy of it at the recent National Kids Yoga Conference that was held in Washington, D.C. Big shout out to the team there at YoKid and the whole group that put that amazing event together. And I was able to get a copy of the book and to talk to many of the editors and the contributors. And there is a huge group of people who have contributed to this volume. And we're going to talk to one of the principal editors, Jennifer Cohen Harper. She is the founder of Little Flower Yoga. She is an author of a book by the same name, and she is also the founder of the School Yoga Project. She has a vast experience and wealth of knowledge to draw from. Also, she is a vice president of this Yoga Service Council, and she is joining us from New York live today.
Hi, Donna. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. How are things?
Things are good. Things are very good. Busy and good.
Good. Wonderful. All right. So this book has just come out. I know you did a whole, what was it called? We need contributors. Please help us fund this book.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, just kind of squeaked in. It's like, yay, we made it. Fabulous.
We
because
did.
It's such a valuable resource. So,
yeah, we actually exceeded our fundraising goal at the very last minute, so it was really exciting. And thank you, everybody, you know, who contributed.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the purpose of the best practices for yoga in schools.
Sure. So the purpose of this book, and really the collective effort in general, was to offer a resource that could help people, regardless of kind of what training they've been through or where they're teaching or kind of what their background was. It's a resource to help people think about how to bring yoga into schools in ways that are sort of maximally effective and as sustainable as possible, and also in ways that are safe and that are aligned with, you know, both kind of the needs of schools and also some of the things that we don't always think about in the yoga community, like the legal requirements of schools and the kind of the procedures and principles. So, you know, we were really thinking about this book as a way to look at issues of effectiveness, issues of inclusivity, and also issues of sustainability and safety.
Yes, and as I read through it, it's very interesting how, you know, it doesn't follow any one trainer or any one school of thought. It is very much taking yoga and mindfulness techniques and how to really implement them effectively into a school environment, which is a very different environment from a yoga environment.
Exactly. You know, there are so many wonderful children's yoga teacher training programs out there. We really weren't looking to kind of replicate that or create a training. You know, the book assumes that people have a basic level of knowledge about how to teach yoga to children. What we really wanted to do was say, you know, regardless of what training you've done, what are the things that need to be considered in this very unique environment? So the book is appropriate no matter what teacher training or what type of yoga or kind of what your lineage or background is. These are the things that you wouldn't necessarily know if you didn't have experience in a school. So it's very much a collective resource that's not focused on one type of practice or one kind of methodology. It's really about how do you translate these practices into a school environment and how you do that well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so where did the idea of this book initially come from? Like, it's a fabulous book, but this is the end product. So take me back a couple of years, and who came up with this idea, and like, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing, because the origin of this book, in some ways, is a lot like the beginning of the Yoga Service Council itself. We had an opportunity offered to us through the Omega Institute to gather in person with no real objective. So, you know, about 2.5 years ago, you know, the Yoga Service Council has been doing our conferences at Omega for the last 5 years and meeting at Omega every year. And when the YSC first came into existence, it was because Omega had offered us this space to gather and said, you know, do what you will. People doing yoga service come together, talk with each other. You know, one of the things that came after all these years of gathering at Omega is they said, you know, we can give you a little bit more space, and we actually, what do you think you would need? You know, this was what was said to the YSC. What would you need? What would be useful? And, you know, we decided that we would start looking at population-specific issues and challenges. So the yoga service conferences over the last 5 years have been looking at more kind of the through lines of what everybody in yoga service needs to talk about and learn about, regardless of what population you're serving. These gatherings, these best practices gatherings, were an opportunity to look more specifically at different environments and different populations. So this time was offered to us, and it was myself and Tracy Childress, who is my co-editor on this project. We were talking about what would be the best use of this time. And there were a lot of different ideas that we talked about, but we really always wanted to use the time to create some publication or some materials or resources that would be useful to the field. And we thought that the best way to maximize the use of this time, where we were able to invite, you know, over 20 collaborators together, we thought the best way to use this time would be in ways that serve the whole community, not just the 20-some-odd people who were there. So we knew there were going to be a lot of people there with tons of experience, and the conversation was, how do we work collaboratively? How do we communicate with each other? How do we dig into issues that are challenging all of us? And then how do we get what we learn in that week together out to the world? And ultimately, this was the form it took.
Fabulous. Well, I know that for me, ever since you started the Yoga Service Council conferences, I've been like, oh, I would love to go. Right? So, I so want to be there, but it doesn't ever happen. I've never been able to work it into my life. And so for me, having this volume is wonderful in that I don't have to necessarily be there as much as I want to be there, but I can still take the knowledge and feel as if I can benefit from those conversations and from that collective knowledge. So I appreciate you making it accessible to us all. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad you feel that way. You know, part of the big picture goal of the Yoga Service Council over the next few years is to really develop more and more ways to create resources that are easily accessed by a broader community. Because we know not everybody can make it to the conferences, and you know, as wonderful as those conferences are, and they are wonderful, we really are aware of and focused on creating ways to disseminate information more broadly.
Okay. So that being said, who was this book written for? Who should
That's a great question.
It's a best practices book. Now,
everybody.
Who should be reading it?
Everybody, of course. You know, there are several different intended audiences for this book, and I think that the primary audience is people who are interested in sharing yoga and mindfulness in schools. So that would include children's yoga instructors who are interested in bringing practices into schools, and it also includes classroom teachers or other school support staff who are interested in sharing yoga in their own school. That's the kind of first primary audience, people who are actually teaching yoga to children in schools. And then another audience that we were considering was school administrators, superintendents, people looking at policy, people who are interested in bringing yoga into schools at a district-wide or school-wide level. The way that we thought about having this be a resource for them was that we were hoping that we could kind of articulate questions that they might want to ask, for example, when considering bringing a yoga program in, right? Things that they might want to keep in mind in terms of evaluating, is this program a good fit for us? You know, what are the questions that I ask in an interview? What are the things that I look for as a program unfolds to know if it's having a positive effect on our students and, you know, if there's anything that needs to shift.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of callers who have called in, and so it should be fun. As I, you know, I haven't screened them, so we're just going to see who's here and if they've got any questions for us. So let's, you know, it's a live show. It's always interesting. So caller calling from area code 831. Are you on the call? Hello. Hello,
yes,
area code 831. Hi. Who is this?
Hi, I'm. I am Kat, and I live in Santa Cruz, California.
Fabulous.
Hi, Kat.
So do you have a question for Jennifer, for myself, about best practices for yoga in schools?
I actually do have a question. Do you find that a lot of the teachers need to get a PE credential in order to teach yoga in schools?
That's an interesting question. No, actually, we haven't found that at all. And I also want to caution that education is very, you know, location specific. So I couldn't really speak to what's happening in Canada or even across the United States because, of course, you know, our education system is state-based. But here in New York, we have not found that at all. It's been basically up to the discretion of the principal in most cases to decide kind of what the kids get credit for. So we've actually had a lot of success with our teachers teaching programs that the students get phys ed credit for.
Wow, okay, great.
Yep. And it's the same thing here in Canada. It depends on the administration of the school. And and then how they want to give credit, whether it's for credit in PE or also into what we have a CALM area, which is kind of a lifestyles, life skills class, and they learn about stress management and that type of thing. And so sometimes it falls under the stress management health area for credit. So it kind of will fit one or the other. And often it is the school psychologists and counselors who are bringing mindfulness skills into schools, not necessarily the PE department, but it fits in one of those two places.
Right. Do you happen to have a, because I've been proposing a couple different things to my school, do you happen to have a course description of that CALM class online anywhere or anything that I could access?
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and if you, because I'm in Canada, so it's going to be under Alberta Education, and if you type in CALM, I'm sure you can find on your search engine that they post all of their curriculum objectives online, so you should be able to find those. And if you can't, email me. I'm Donna@yogainmyschool.com, and I'll see what I can find out for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for calling. Bye.
Thanks, Kat.
Bye.
All right, now we have another caller, 604. So I believe that this is somebody calling from BC. Maybe I'm wrong. Hello, caller from 604.
Hello, it's Allison calling from Vancouver, BC.
Hi, Allison. Yeah, I saw 604. I'm like, oh, I know that area code.
fellow Canadians unite.
Yeah, do you have a question for Jennifer or for myself?
Yeah, I've got a couple questions, actually. And I apologize because I jumped on the line just 2 or 3 minutes late. But I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the review that was done and, like, the methodology that you guys used to do this, to create this resource.
Fabulous. Great question.
Sure. I think it's, you know, the question about the review is part of kind of a bigger question of how this process went. And so maybe if I kind of give you the overview of that, it will help you make sense of it. So the first thing that happened is we issued a wide kind of swath of invitations to participate in this project, and participation required quite a big commitment. Everybody did a lot of work prior to an in-person meeting that we had. So the first thing we did was send this survey to everybody and ask them to submit best practices and research and questions. And, you know, we gathered a ton of information from all of the participants. And then we met at Omega for 5 days for a working meeting. And during those 5 days, the 23 contributors that were part of the book met both in big group and in small breakout groups to really discuss what had been submitted through the surveys, refine, you know, debate, talk about important, what questions needed to be asked. And then at the end of that working meeting, at the end of that 5 days, everybody submitted all of their materials to Tracy and myself. And we recruited 4 additional people that we called contributing editors to help us review and refine all of the material. So then it was about an 18-month process of going through this material, organizing it, reaching back out to the groups and the contributors for clarification, questions, fleshing out of ideas. And then Tracy and I, you know, did kind of the final editing and looked for gaps, what was missing, things that we needed to add. And we often went back to the contributing editors to ask them to kind of fill in the holes within their area of expertise. So after that, that was about a year and a half, we had a first draft. And we sent that to 4 reviewers. Who I think is what you're, you know, the people that you're asking about. We sent those out to 4 reviewers who had different areas of expertise. One of them was a school superintendent. One of them is a yoga and schools researcher. We sent it to Tish Jennings, who works very much in mindfulness and social emotional education, and also to Carol Horton, who we had brought in kind of to look at some of the issues around social justice and inclusivity. She's an author who writes primarily about yoga and politics. So we sent this out to these 4 reviewers, and they sent us back notes, questions, suggestions, sometimes additional research, you know, new research to look at. And we spent probably about a month and a half or so integrating all of their feedback and answering their questions and refining. And then we landed where we are, and we also brought in a copy editor and sent everything back to all of the contributors for kind of final questions or comments. And that's how the process went.
Just easy peasy like that.
Does that answer your question?
Totally. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's awesome to see.
All right. Anything else for Jennifer?
I do have one more question, and I apologize because I haven't actually read the resource yet, and I'm really excited to. I'm just wondering if you guys looked at and what did you find in terms of who is best positioned to deliver yoga in schools? And I know that this is a broad question, but we've been looking at, I work with Lululemon, and we've been looking at how do we support this movement? Is it through working directly with teachers or higher levels within the public sector, school boards, or is it working through nonprofits? And I just love your thoughts on what you found to be the most effective.
That's an extremely important question, and I'm afraid I'm going to give you a relatively unsatisfying answer to it. Because like all good questions, the answer is it depends. And we actually did address this in one of the best practices. There's what's ideal and there's what's possible, and sometimes those things flip-flop in ways we wouldn't expect. So, you know, I think there was a broad consensus that students benefit most from the practices when they have regular exposure to them from their classroom teachers and school staff, that, you know, when the practices are reinforced by the people that they spend every day with, and when the practices are kind of imbued into the culture of the school, that's when students benefit the most. Now, I will say, this is not a research-based statement. You know, this is a kind of a conversational consensus among people who've been doing this for a long time, but there's not clear research on this, so as far as I know. So that was sort of where we were coming from, but then we also, when we look at the programs that are actually out there and what's possible and what's happening, the reality is that in a many, many, many situations, it is not feasible to ask school staff to do what needs to be done in order to really have the most impact on students. You know, school teachers, school staff are extremely busy. In some cases, there's contractual conflicts and issues with the unions, the teacher unions, and all sorts of things that you might not expect, so that even teachers who are interested sometimes face barriers to really implementing full kind of powerful programs. And then there's another problem, which is that you trying to implement a program in a school and expose a lot of teachers and then expect the teachers to share with the students, you get a huge sort of discrepancy in how well the program is taught and how much the students benefit based on the sort of commitment and understanding and learning of each individual teacher. So you have situations where you might do the same professional development workshop for 30 teachers, and one class is having an amazing experience because they have a classroom teacher with a personal practice and a background in yoga, and then another class is getting virtually nothing because the teacher is sort of like, yeah, that was fine, but I'm not really doing this. It's not worth it. So there's kind of this ideal that, yes, in the best possible circumstance, the students would have the people who they're with every day sharing these skills and these practices. But the reality is that that often doesn't really play out that wonderfully in practice. So supporting programs that send teachers, you know, trained certified teachers into a school is often the way that the kids are getting the best experience. And then what my personal recommendation would be is to look for some sort of combination. You know, so at Little Flower, for example, we work with a lot of schools in a dual capacity where we train their staff, but we also do direct service with their students, where we send a teacher perhaps once a week to work with the kids, and then we do professional development with the teachers so that they don't have to be solely in charge of teaching the activities, but they have enough familiarity to support the practices and kind of implement things occasionally.
Yeah, and that's how mine works as well. I'm in at yoga in my school. We are in schools offering classes weekly, monthly, maybe even just once a year. It depends on the school. As well, we offer a full range of professional development options for schools depending on what works for them. And every school is going to be a very unique situation, even across one school board. So, yeah, you do the best you can, and you keep offering. You keep offering. You keep inviting. You say, hey, it's here. These techniques help, and they will improve the school climate and the students' experience there. So thank you very much for those questions. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, one thing I would add, Allison, is that one of the best practices, you know, as we were writing the best practices, what kept coming up over and over again is listen to the school. You know, we really, it's hard because we want to create, you know, kind of broad change and we want to work in a system-wide way, but schools are still very much individual microcosms, you know, individual communities. So, you know, communication and clear, transparent communication with every school and each administrator and really listening carefully to what the needs of the school community are. It's just something that came up over and over and over again in a lot of different ways, and this is no different. You know, some schools really have a teaching staff that is into it and excited and willing to dive in, and for others, you have to send in a teacher because they know that it's just not going to take if they try to do it through the staff.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate such a thorough and awesome answer.
All right. All right. Now, I want to underline, because it's very, very evident in the Best Practices for Yoga in Schools book, that a huge underlying component of the book is the research. Can you talk to about why the research is so important?
Sure. You know, it's a hard question because so many of us have personal experience with yoga, and we say, okay, we know yoga works. Why do we need all this research? You know, we know this in our gut, in our heart, in our lives. We know it based on the feedback from the kids. But there are basically, I guess there are two real reasons that we wanted to stay very grounded in the research. One is because if you want broader legitimacy and funding in public systems, you need research, right? You know, funding and policy follow research. Although sometimes they don't seem to in the political world, but you know, in a lot of ways, funding and policy follow research. So we felt that, you know, always, of course, we need to keep those things in mind. But then the other thing to consider is that there's a lot we don't know. You know, we can say yoga is great and it helps kids, but there's a lot we don't know about what exactly is it within the yoga. You know, what types of practices are most effective? And if we have limited time, which we always will when we're talking about working in schools, you know, sometimes we go in and we have 15 minutes with the kids. If we have limited time and limited resources, then we need research to help us figure out what is the most effective use of that limited time and resources. So, you know, we were really hoping to, as much as possible, kind of dig into the research and understand what are the common threads between programs that have a big impact. You know, there's lots of different children's yoga programs being implemented in schools. They're very different from each other in a lot of ways, but we're hoping to figure out what are the kind of common threads, common elements, common denominators that are really crossing programs and having a big impact on the students. And, you know, to be honest, there's a long way to go with the research in that capacity, you know, and one of the things that we did in writing the book was articulate some questions that we hope research will answer in the future. For example, we don't have a lot of research-based information on, say, what practices are safe or not safe for kids. You know, questions like, is headstand appropriate for kids and at what age? Or, you know, very vigorous breathing practices safe for all ages of kids, and you know, questions about the duration of kids.
You've got my inner alarms going off.
It should. But the thing is, you know, we all have an inner alarm that's activated by different things, and that's a problem if we want to move forward as a field. You know, if we're looking at yoga in schools as a field, you know, one of the goals with this best practices project was to say, you know, how are we going to come together as a field? Because, you know, every program has their own best practices. We all have, like you said, we all have our own inner alarms. We all have our own kind of knowledge base from our teachers and our experiences. But if we're going to move forward as a field, we need to start clarifying what those things are collectively. It's not enough to have a bunch of different inner alarms. So, you know, we thought that this project would be a good start, and we hope that it continues to kind of spur collaborative communication and action. And also, we do hope that some of the questions we asked and things that we raised will be able to give researchers some interesting questions. You know, what they'll do with it, who knows. But, for example, that question of, you know, at what age is headstand safe?
Yes, exactly.
We could
at
really
what
use
age
that
do we employ which breathing techniques? Yep.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah,
and have that research behind that.
And we looked for those kind of things, and we really didn't find them. So, you know,
once you start asking those kind of things, there's lots of questions, because so often we rely on a lineage. And it's like, okay, this is how I was taught, but now I need to question why was I taught.
Exactly. And one of the primary things that we learned was that teaching yoga in schools is ultimately a cross-disciplinary endeavor. And if you're just coming at it from the yoga, it's not going to work, you know, teaching yoga in schools is something that crosses so many fields, you know, education, physical and occupational therapy, social work, psychology, you know, so many fields have information to contribute. So that's, you know, that was a big lesson.
Well, we are Clee drawing to the end of our time together, and so I want to just give a big shout out. The next Yoga Service Council conference is in May in Omega, and I really encourage you to go, especially if you want to be involved in any of the upcoming white books and other best practices volumes that will be being produced. I believe the next one is for like at risk or prison. I can't remember.
Oh, the next one is on working with veterans. The next one is on working with veterans. And then the one after that is working with the prison court-involved and incarcerated people.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful
Thank
talking
you,
with
Donna.
You, and it was so great to see you last month, and I can't wait to see what else comes out of the Yoga Service Council. You guys do such great work. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna. Great talking with you.
Okay. This has been a live broadcast from Yoga in My School on our Blog Talk radio show. I wish you a very happy holidays. However you're celebrating, be sure to do it with love, with compassion for yourself and for others. You can visit and get and download all of the past episodes from iTunes, or you can find them on Blog Talk Radio or on Yoga in My School. Until next time, namaste.
Thank you.